Hi, welcome to Mixed Identity Podcast. This is your host, Heather Puri. This is a podcast where I interview different people who have multiple identities, and not in the mental health sense, but because they identify from different perspectives of their life. And I believe that we all identify differently in different ways, and it doesn't have to be mixed race to have multiple identities. You can have an identity as your career, and you can identify as a parent, and you can identify as a individual in so many different ways. And so I am wrapping up, this is episode 6, and I'm wrapping up my family, which has been a lot of fun. I'm going to do some cousins, but I'm wrapping up my immediate family with my siblings and my mother. And with this episode, which is my eldest brother, Ken, I just started really thinking about, it's one of the reasons I did this, like how differently we think about race. And one of the things that I realize is I think about race a lot. Like every day, I think about it, and I'm not really sure why I am, we could go obsessive, but I think that's a little far, but it's something that really interests me. Why is this something that I gravitate towards? And I am not sure, but what is so different is that Ken doesn't. I mean, even when you'll hear how he identifies himself, his race plays very little role. And I started to think, because my mom felt that way too in talking with her, and I wondered if it was a generational thing. My brother, eldest brother, is Gen X, right in there, and my mom is a boomer, and I wonder if there's just the world is changing so fast when it comes to race and social justice and inequality and those thoughts about it. Or is that the world I live in? Like, do I live in a bubble because I surround myself with the type of podcasts I do and the type of news that I read, that I'm seeing this change in this discussion of race? But then I think I'm seeing it in places more. For example, we see ABC with Black-ish and Mixed-ish. We have those conversations going on in major media outlets. So I don't think I'm wrong. And I wonder if this is a generational change. I get put in the Gen X, but I'm that cusp of Gen X and millennials. And so I'm really wondering if it's a generational thing, or it's the fact that both my mom and brother present as people of color and cannot pass and cannot have had to even subconsciously learn ways to exist within the environments they need to exist in, and standing up against, their standing up against the white oppressor is something that I can do because I can pass. And when I have, these people are not oppressors, but when I stand up about to the systemic racism or inequality that I see, I can do that because I am white passing. And so I think maybe white people are more able to express themselves because they, I'm undercover and they don't know, except how do you not know for me? Or they forget because I don't present in the way that they expect. And so when that type of, those type of inequalities, I can just, I stand up and I talk about it. Not always to success, but sometimes. So is it that they present as, that they're brown, or, and I'm not? Or is it that, I really wonder, my brother and my mother, they really live a life where they don't see race affecting them as much, which is weird because I've been with my mom and I've heard people say things about my brother where their race was something that defined them to people. I don't know. And maybe that's, maybe I'm too myopic and too focused on that, but I just feel like it it affects people a lot more than they realize. Like, people's color affects people, and you don't want to think that these people you work with, that it affects them, or these people you go to church with. And it's not that these people are bad people. There's just they haven't learned the difference. They haven't been called out for saying things that are, I don't know. It's really a big question for me of why, if you have listened, and or if you'd like to go back and listen to all my siblings and, you know, my story peppered throughout, like, both my mom and my brother, eldest brother, who are brown, have much more easygoing, and so do my other brothers too, and my sister. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the one who struggles with that, and maybe that's just, I don't know. So that's my pontification, and now I'm going to I have a question. I'm thinking of changing up the format every once in a while about to move away from interviewing living guests, which I would like to do, but I'm thinking of maybe doing research on historical mixed race people. So this would include maybe Clark Gable, who had Black and Native ancestry, William Benton, who I mentioned is anthropologist who is half Simpson and half Scottish, who saved a lot of our stories and recorded them, or even Maria Tallchief, who was a prima ballerina and married to George. I never get his name right, but the guy who wrote, you know, The Nutcracker, but she was a very famous prima ballerina, and just these people who have existed in life and were mixed race. And, you know, to contemporary, I'd like to focus on historical right now, because I think it's something that's, their story is missing from our history, the story of mixed race people. I think it would be interesting, and I'd love to hear your feedback. I'm going to try to get more on the socials out there and ask questions and engage with you more. But please let me know if you'd be interested in hearing kind of maybe a half hour research podcast, historical podcast about mixed race folks, just to bring that to the forefront. I think I would really like to hear that. And I am going to apologize right now for the ambulance siren in the background. That is my son playing. He did stay quiet for almost 8 minutes, which was great. But I'd also like to apologize in this upcoming episode with my brother that there is some audio quality issues at the end. Our internet connection started to cut out when he was sharing what he's really into right now. And so if you don't catch on, it's learning how to do things with YouTube videos, which is great. Anything from sports to wiring your house for Ethernet, which is cool. YouTube does put in front of you the ability to learn anything that you want. If you have the inclination to it, especially, you know, I think one of the things he brought up was that some of the sports learning was saved for people who were wealthy, because they would have trainers and coaches, and you can just go on YouTube and learn this stuff now. So that's cool. And remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can check us out on the on Facebook at Identity Mixed, and on Instagram at Identity_Mixed, or you can go to my website at identitymixed.com, and you can leave me a message and give me some feedback. I really enjoy the comments that I have had and the nice words that you have shared with me. It really helps. And so after this break for our sponsors, you're gonna have listen to the final episode with my family, with my direct family. And Ken is a great person, and he also has had a huge influence on my life, from teaching me how to do the Kid and Play and the Running Man before my first boy and girl dance, all the way to helping me be successful in my education and hence my career and my life. So I just really hope you enjoy listening to him. He is a great person and a great brother. So yeah. All right. Thanks for tuning in to Mixed Identity. Stay tuned.
I tell Johnny or Emmy or Bri or whoever that it's good to want things. It's good to want and to not get, because yeah, then it makes you work to get them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that is good. That is good. And we're both in a place where we can afford that our children will not have to ever want, but I think it's good for them not to get. I'm worried I'm too easygoing and giving things. They got Kindles for Diwali, and that's just the whole.
I remember when Johnny was playing with this. I'll tell you what, it's been awesome in the move, because the guys, when they were fixing the house, they accidentally cut the Xfinity wire, the cable wire, too close to the conduit, so they couldn't hook it up for our house. So we don't have internet. I'm over the phone lines right now, over the LTE. So the kids haven't been able to watch or do anything. So they're out playing. Johnny has found a crowbar that he digs holes with. and Caleb has his dump truck that he fills full of sand and takes off all over the place.
Oh my gosh, we have to come visit
rocks
you.
And stuff. Yeah. It's awesome. It's the house is so nice too. It's like I moved into a resort, you know. It's kind of crazy. And right now we're just staying in the guest bedroom because we're still finishing some stuff up in the master. And we also need to get waiting on a new mattress for that room too. So
yeah. I'm wondering if my microphone is picking up the crying happening in the background. Upstairs, or if it's just my eagle ears. But they, my kid can handle two kids.
No, it's picking up.
Yeah, for sure. You can hear him. Yeah, this is when you live. See, you need a closet in a guest room in a giant house instead of a tiny. Yeah. I recorded Aaron in my bathroom, hidden in my bathroom. And Rehan still found me, and I had to edit him out because he showed up. And Aaron's episode is really short because Rehan wouldn't leave. He's no. And I don't know where Ankit was at the time. But so with that, I'm going to introduce my eldest brother, the person who probably has the most influence on my life out of anyone. I've been thinking about it. People are how'd you end up where you are? And because sometimes I'm how did I end up in Queen Anne, in living the life I am living in, that kind of stuff. And they're who was that influence? And I think it was you. I wouldn't have an MBA, and I wouldn't have met my husband, and I wouldn't have pursued a lot of things if it wasn't for this gentleman who is joining the podcast today. And a reminder of what podcast you're listening to. It's Mixed Identity, the podcast where I, your host, Heather Perry, interview people who have more than one identity. And again, that can be race, which is mixed race, which is what we're talking about mostly because that's what interests me. But it can go beyond that. And my guest this week is my eldest brother, Ken Beale, and also the biggest influence on my life, probably. So thanks. I like my life, and you're a big part of that. So
it's been great being a part of your life. So thanks for having me.
All right. So to start off this, I like to ask how you identify yourself. And it can be, of course, this podcast is more mixed race. But if you talk to Paul at all, he really his biggest thing that he identifies and we talked a lot about was the LDS church and his being a member of that church. So it can be. But how do you, Ken Beale, identify?
So at different times in my life, I've sort of identified as different things. And right now, I guess I just identify as being a dad and, identify with my job and, you know, the people that I'm around a lot.
What is, can you let the listeners know what your job is?
So I'm a physician. I'm a radiation oncologist, and I treat patients with cancer. So, and I love what I do. But, I mean, I have been, you know, all over the world, and I feel like I fit in wherever I am, you know, that people, I often get asked, like, questions, you know, like, in different languages, you know, so and I don't necessarily feel like I have, you know, mixed race. Mom's half Native American, Tsimshian, and when I have been up in Alaska, I've identified as Tsimshian, and when I'm here in Salinas, you know, I speak Spanish, and so a lot of people identify me as being Latino, right? Even though I'm not at all. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, I don't really feel like race is that big a part of my identity at this point, you know? People, when they see me and talk to me, I feel like, I don't know if that, I just don't feel like that's something that they see a lot of when they look at me, or maybe it's that they see it and that they see what I do and they don't really attribute what I do, associate what I do with the race.
People who are brown?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but I don't know, I guess I haven't spent a lot of time, you know, in Alaska, you know, a few summers, I should say, and so I don't have a huge, you know, I mean, I have an affinity to, you know, that group of people, but I don't, you know, I mean, just haven't spent a ton of time with them, you know.
Yeah, I feel
be able to say.
Yeah, this is a big part. I would say that in the last, because I've been dancing now with Tsimshian Haiyuk and, like, really involved, like, learning to weave and just learning different things. Like, I feel more in touch with my Tsimshian identity than I have in a long time. But I've also, you know, did my internship with Sea Alaska and got to spend time, you know, gutting seals. And, like, I think I've had, of all
That's
of
gross.
Us.
That's grosser than getting the salmon that I would spend my summers up in.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I have so much I want to go into there, but I'd love to hear just at times you've identified more with your Tsimshian identity, and you can talk about the summers as a kid you spent up there, but also you've been able to spend some time as an adult as well up on the reservation.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I think we went up there, we just went up there one time, and I think I was 11 or 12 or something. We didn't have a lot of money, and so, you know, mom and dad just couldn't afford to, like, take us up very often. So I think that, I don't know if you could say that hindered that, but, you know, that was part of the reason that we didn't spend much, maybe it was part of the time reason that we didn't spend so much time up there. But we spent a month or so up there with grandma and aunt, you know, all our aunts and stuff, and that was lots of fun. So, but at the time, you know, I'll tell you one story about that first time that I went up there. Like, I saw all my cousins, you know, that they got to dance, and I thought the dancing was okay, you know, whatever, you know, it looked kind of fun. But I saw how much they were getting paid. And that was the only thing I was jealous about.
I didn't know how much were they getting. I didn't know they were getting paid.
They were they would dance for the tourists who came in on the little, not on the ferry, but on their little tour boats once a week.
Yeah, the cruise.
Couple times a week.
The
little cruises, like the super exclusive, like expensive, crazy cruises would come in. Yeah. And so these kids were like, they'd get tipped like $100 each or something like that for like dancing for 45 minutes or something, you know? And and I was like, dude, how come I'm not doing that? And that was my introduction to my So there's that, you know, I think, listening to mom and grandma and Aunt Jen and Auntie Ruth, probably the most of all, you know, there was a lot, you know, I wouldn't say animosity towards, you know, the people up on the island or anything, but they knew that they wanted out of there. And you can totally understand it too. I mean, you look and see what's going on there, you know, the opportunities that people have there. And I say myself sometimes, like, the best thing that happened, you know, for myself, my family, I wouldn't be where I am if it weren't for grandma and grandpa deciding to leave with their job with Pan Am, you know, back in the 60s.
Absolutely. I say all the time that, like, I would not have two college degrees. Like, for grandma, just us graduating from high school was a huge thing. But both of us having, I mean, you have a doctorate, which is, I mean, you worked really hard to get. I went to school for an extra 2 years. But we both had advanced degrees and are successful. And the only reason, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons, but the key reason is that grandma and grandpa said, we're not raising our daughters on the reservation. And I think you can even see it in a split with Aunt Jen, who grew up mostly on the reservation, and Auntie Ruth's kids, who grew up the littlest on the reservation, and where they are, you know. Emma's going to be one of my next guests, and so it'll be fun to talk with her, too.
Yeah. Emma's in medical school, where I went to medical school.
Yes.
I need to talk to her about... that reminds me, that's good, because I need to talk to her about applying for residencies and stuff.
She's interviewing already.
I know, and I need to talk to her about that. So,
I'm hoping she gets into the one in Oregon that she says she'd like to go to, because then she could come visit us. But that's not a reason to get a residency. So you're a doctor. I have an MBA, and I have a husband with the MBA. And, you know, Emma's getting her... MD as well. And you just see that, I mean, for, if you look at just the population of Native Americans with college degrees at all, it's only something like 10% or 15%. One of the organizations that I received a scholarship from, like, posts it and regularly, and I can't remember the exact thing, but I think that's a big influence. But you also went up and earned money, because that's always been a big thing for you on the reservation. And can you talk a little bit about when you went up? You were like 17, maybe?
No, I was 15 and a half.
You are 15? So, what? Aren't there laws against that?
Well, there should have been, because I was working heavy machinery, right? Yeah. So, I mean, this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, and, you know, people getting off the reservation, because Jimmy, our cousin, was up there. You know, he's another guy you should probably talk to about this, right? But he was logging, you know, he was 18, 19, and he was logging. And while I was up there, you know, one of his buddies, like, got killed because, you know, one of the logs fell on him and stuff. And so Jimmy quit his job logging. Well, something similar happened to me, you know. So I went up there, you know, as a 15 and a half year old. I think I was making just under 10 bucks an hour, which, you know, back in those days was about 3 times minimum wage. Catching salmon, and there was lots of overtime, you know, there's lots of time, you know, there were lots of hours that I could work. It was awesome, except they had me, you know, gutting salmon, which, you know, wasn't so awesome. And so there's this machine that my hand actually got caught in while I was working there, and smashed my thumb and ended my football career.
Your football career, your NFL career.
you know, three other guys from my junior high school made the NFL, so I'm sure I would have been one of them if it weren't for my smashed thumb. You know, so.
I didn't know that. Three kids from Lorebeer.
Yeah, one of them has a Super Bowl ring, but three kids on my year, junior high school. One of them won a national championship in college with Nebraska. Another one went to USC, and another one went to UCLA, and all three played in the NFL.
Which is good. And I wonder, I was just listening to, I was going to ask you how you feel about, cause we've talked about this before, that they're now allowing college, football and sports students to make money off their name, and I know you really support that, but also, like, would these kids that you knew from Lorebeer have gone to college if it wasn't for football, do you think?
Todd would have, for sure.
Yeah.
Rod, they were both in the honors. They
okay.
All, two of them at least were in the honors track with me, Rodney and Todd. Sheldon, I think, you know, he's a smart kid. He wasn't in my classes, but he went to Damien. And okay. The
which is a private school where we lived.
Yeah. And yeah. So, I don't know Sheldon well enough to, like, know whether he would have, but I'm sure Todd and Rodney okay. would have. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder, because you hear often about, were they all people of color? Or men
of
color?
Yeah. They're all black.
They're all black.
And I thought I was like going to be all pro and starting for my freshman football team. I didn't even start for my freshman football team as quarterback. Mostly because all the other guys, not a lot of guys from our junior high school went to our high school because our high school was like not a good high school, right?
At
so
all. Yeah.
And people who could, you know, they were going to, you know, Todd, I don't know how he worked it out, but he ended up going to Walnut, which is another more wealthy neighborhood nearby. I don't know if his parents actually moved or not, but I don't think they did. And then Rodney went to Bishop Amat and Sheldon went to Damien. So, you know, none of the people from our junior high school football team ended up going to Ganesha. And so, you know, so I didn't have that in, you know, with the best players on the team. But I also think I wasn't as good as I thought I was.
Well, that could have been a better thing in the long run. So you went up, did you, that summer when you were there and working in the salmon industry, did you have a chance to be more involved in cultural things while you were up there at 15? Or was that?
So I was working like probably 12 hours a day.
Okay, so you were just sleeping.
So, and that was Monday through Saturday. And I could have worked Sundays too, but you know, so I went to church on Sundays and took the day off. And, but yeah, you know, I got to, I mean, I hung out, I played basketball, you know, at the community center there every night after, I don't know how I had any energy to do it, but I, you know, I was,
it's amazing,
I was
15 with 15 and a half, year olds.
15 and a half, and I could do whatever I wanted, you know, and so, you know, plus at first that summer, I was actually training, you know, for football. I had a friend who came up with me who was not. Okay, so this is kind of interesting. So I had a friend who came up with me, Chad, what was Chad's last name?
Peterson, right?
Chad Peterson. So he's white, and he came up with me, and so we would, you know, throw the football around, he'd run routes and stuff, so I, you know, was planning on going back and playing football when I got back home. But so that was interesting. So, like, people treated me, I could see people totally treated me different than they treated Chad. You know, they treated me sort of more as part of the group. Even though, you know, a lot of the workers there, they weren't actually people from the island. They were, you know, people from other communities nearby. There's some Tlingit and Haida people, but a lot of Filipinos, you know, too, who worked there as well. And, but, you know, I had grandma there, and so she would introduce me to everybody and, like, totally take care of me and give me anything that I ever wanted. It was actually kind of awesome that way. Like, she'd make me treats and, like, you know, and so that was kind of cool. But, yeah, so, and I had Jimmy and I had Bonna, who, like, knew everybody and went to high school in town, and they would introduce me around. And
yeah,
so I was,
yeah.
You know, I was part of the community, and then I got hurt. And so I was just sort of recuperating, you know, after that. I got my thumb smashed in the machine, and they cut the heads off of the salmon.
Yeah.
And so, well, not in that machine, in the machine that was next to that one. So I was just recuperating. So I was, like, not really doing a lot. So I got to hang out and, like, do all sorts of different stuff. And we had July 4th off, and I ran in the races, and, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And Founders Day and all that sort of stuff. So that was kind of fun. So yeah, I mean, I was there. I think Eric Brendable was there too. So our cousin. So, and he was my age, and he had lived there for a little bit at least when he was a kid. So he knew everybody, and Butch, Uncle Butch, and everybody were there. So I mean, so then I was like part of that community. And in some ways, like, wherever I go, I feel like I'm part of the community. You know, I mean, like, here in Salinas, you know, where I am now, I feel like, you know, as, you know, it, among the physicians, I'm just part of the community, right?
Yeah.
If I go to church, then I'm part of the community. If I go to, you know, to this, so today, so I'm also a lay minister at church, right?
Okay.
So today I gave a sermon in Spanish, right? And so, you know, the people there, you know, you're not necessarily one of them. And I felt the same way up in Alaska, you know, like I wasn't one of them, but I was a part of them. You know, I was close enough, you know, at least.
I think that's just such a wonderful way and so different from, I think, how I feel sometimes and how I know Ruth has felt, is that we feel that we're not part of it. Like, we're not part of it, but we're kind of outside. Like, she, in talking to her, but I love your, say it, you just, you're close enough. I love that. It's just, you're always part of the community wherever you go.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit, there's one time that I found really interesting. You've lived all over the world and all over this country, and one of the places I think where race is, I think, a big deal and has been lately, but you lived in St. Louis, Missouri for a long time. And I remember asking you once, because I was fascinated, like, because race there is black and it's white. And I asked you, well, what are you, you know? And you said, well, do you remember what you said?
I don't know, but I would have said, I'm whatever I need to be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, wherever I'm at.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you said, I'm not black, so I fit more in the white. But that's, do you think you're able to make that, like, in St. Louis, is it because you are that part of the community of physicians that allows you to be part of the wider community where you have lived versus, because, I mean, you're a brown dude. So, like, how do you, I mean, have you ever had issues with the police? Have you ever had, like, to people who don't know you and don't, like, you don't walk around with a doctor, a stethoscope on? I've never seen you with a stethoscope in my life. Like, how about people who don't know? But I also know in St. Louis, you did a lot of work with the youth, like with black youth. And it's very involved. And I think you were able to fit in there in a way that a white physician never could have. Right. And I think that's what you're talking about. Like, you can move through communities.
Yeah. I think part of not being. So, I mean, I think I'm sort of like you in that way. I've noticed that I'm not the same, you know, as other people. Mm-hmm. Right. There's something different about the way that I look and talk, because, you know, because I grew up with mom and dad and, you know, and all the other totally different reasons that I talk and do the things that I do. But I've also, you know, felt that, you know, like, one of the most important things for me is, like, trying to understand other people, you know, and so whether that was, you know, the black youth in St. Louis or the people that I was with up in, you know, in Alaska or, you know, in Argentina when I lived there and when I was a missionary or, you know, wherever I've been, you know, I just want to, well, part of it is I just want to be friends with everybody too, right? You know, I want to like get along with people and I want to, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah. So sorry, what was your question again?
Well, do you think, so you are a brown person, and I was wondering if you've ever had interaction with people when they just see who you are and they don't, like, up in Alaska, you had entry through, I mean, you're part of that community, you're Tsimshian and you had family there. Like, in St. Louis, when you were either through the church or through your medical school, there's like, I'm a physician or I'm soon to be a physician kind of guy. And then I believe, and I don't know if you're right, but you'd like your entree into helping black youth in a way that I don't think a white person could is from your skin color. But I guess my question is, how has your identity, your physical identity and how the world perceives you when they don't know you're part of said community already? Is there an experience you can talk about?
Yeah, so I've been stopped by the cops like three or four times when I was young, right? I don't know if this applies. I mean, and that's like 30 years ago, right? So I don't know if this applies to today's world. There's another time that I got stuck, but that one's actually really interesting. So I'm so a couple times I got stopped with some of my white friends from church, and one of my white friends, you remember Tommy Fry, right? So he, so I, so I'm driving and like I was speeding and like trying to get home because I was gonna be home late. Mom and dad were gonna get upset, and so I'm like driving fast and sort of weaving in and out of traffic, which I shouldn't have been doing. I should have just driven, whatever, and gone home. So the cops weren't bad, but my friend Tommy, who's a white guy, like totally gave him a ton of crap. And like finally, like yeah. So this is the last time one of the last times I hung out with Tommy. And
He's a pretty arrogant dude.
yeah. So anyway, so Tommy, has given these cops crap, and like they made me get out, and I was like, dude, I don't know what's wrong with this guy, and they they frisked me, and like and just check and make sure I wasn't drinking alcohol, and of course I wasn't, and but they they roughed Tommy up a little bit, not real bad or anything,
They did good.
but
I was gonna say, did they leave him in the car? I'm glad they got him out of the car at least.
Did you say good? No, I mean you should be able to say, I mean he,
Well, no, not
so
good.
what?
It would have been worse if you were the only one taken out of the car. They shouldn't, the
Yeah.
cops should not have taken you out of the car and frisked you
No.
at all. I will say that. But
I don't know if they really. I can't even say that they frisked me. They just had me get out of the car, and I know they frisked Tommy. I had my hands on the hood, on the back of the car for a second, but that's just because he said, "Wait there, keep your hands on the hood," and then they were taking care of Tommy, right? But I can't say exactly what they did, but anyway. So another interaction I had with my friends is I can't remember what we were doing. We weren't up to any. We weren't doing anything bad, but we also weren't doing anything good. We were just like,
You were being good.
running through the neighborhood, and I was with some black friends from school, from high school, right? And so, and we like, I just remember them saying that they couldn't get caught by the cops, right? And we didn't, so we didn't really have any interaction other than like seeing them, and so I can't say, I've never had if they had got us, it would have been interesting to see what the difference in the interaction would have been, but I've only ever been caught, with Tommy. There's another time with Tommy too, like when like Tommy, we were at the beach, and Tommy like looked in some dude's car who had like a sound system, and Tommy wasn't doing anything bad, but he shouldn't have been poking his head in some dude's car. Anyway, the dude like calls the beach patrol on their bicycles or something, I don't know. So they like hassled us, and like they directed it. So there were four of us, and Tommy was again being a jerk, and so Tommy took the brunt of it. But they also kind of hassled me a little bit more than other kids. And I was only, I mean, I don't really have any reason for that other than like I might have been asserting our rights, sort of thing. I can't remember whether I was asserting our rights or, it could be that, or it was just that I was the one brown kid, at the time. So I don't, so I can't really say, I've ever like, had any problems. Another time was in St. Louis. Some cop gave me a ticket for not turning my left turn blinker on, I can't, I don't know whether he was just trying to get to his quota or like hassling some dude in a beanie because it was cold, but so but that's the extent of that. So I can't really attribute any of that really to like being brown or anything. So you're asking me how have my more affluent white friends like perceive me outside of being a physician? Is
Yeah,
that
like
that?
before, yeah, I think that is a question. Like you, when you enter a white space, or an affluent space, because
Here.
we weren't, We didn't grow up affluent either, but like, how have you had any interesting, or even it could be like, nah, everything, I've always been very comfortable in this space. And for my personal, I know I still, like, I feel awkward sometimes. Like, I was hanging out with a bunch of, like, affluent white moms at a playdate place. And and this could just be my anxiety, right? But, like, I'm not affluent. Or I guess I am now. But I was just, like, there's this one mom, like, that I just feel like I'm always saying the wrong things with. And I just feel awkward and weird. But that just might be me. But I don't know.
Yeah. Like, this is kind of funny. So I'm at, I'm wealthy, right? Or not, I don't know if I'm wealthy, but I'm like, you know, I've got plenty for what I need to get for what I need, right? Anyway, so I'm at this church meeting with, mostly older white guys, and they're talking about, you know, where they buy their meat, you know, the barbecue and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So they're talking about where they buy their meat at Costco or which place they buy their meat for their barbecue. And so I'm there, and there's this other guy there who's also white, you know, but, you know, lives, you know, and I've always lived somewhere where there is, like, probably a big Latino. And part of the reason I picked where to live is because there's a big Latino community around, and I love being able to treat patients who wouldn't have healthcare access otherwise. But anyway, so he sort of lives in the same side of town. We're either in Salinas rather than Monterey, you know, Pacific Grove, the wealthy part of town. And so I said something like, I just go down to the carniceria, you know, and like, and buy whatever is on sale. You know? and these guys like sort of didn't, you know, it was sort of awkward, you know, and stuff. But I mean, it's not, other than that, you know, they never would have treated me any different, you know. And I mean, that's a church too, and most of those guys know me, you know. So I guess that's not entirely in what you said. But let me go back. I'll go back to. I have another really good story for you. So
okay,
one of my good friends in college. Do I say his name or do I?
You can. I have a total of like 25 listeners who probably like will not know your friend.
Well, I'll leave him anonymous, but he's one of my roommates, right? We're both. He took an extra year to graduate college, right? You know. But we're both applying to medical school, and I got into like a really good medical school and got a scholarship, and you know. Things were looking great for me, and he still had a couple classes to take, and he was going to apply to medical school the next year, and he was I don't know if I would say jealous or anything like that, but he's like seeing, you know, what he's going to have to go through the next year, and it was also kind of nerve-wracking too, you know, because you know, I wasn't sure. And I got into my first medical school, and I was, like, totally excited, right? And then I got into this better medical school, and, you know, and then I had the scholarship, and he was, like, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said something about, you know, if I were Native American, I wouldn't, you know, I can't remember exactly. I shouldn't be putting words in his mouth.
I wonder, though, if it was his mom who said the same thing when you got early acceptance into BYU.
Did I get early acceptance into BYU?
Yeah, you did. And I think it's the same person's mom who basically said the same thing to mom about you. That basically you got early acceptance, not because your grades were spectacular, your test scores were spectacular, but because you're brown. So.
Yeah. So, but he, you know, I don't know if that was, I have no I have no idea what his mom said. This is the first time hearing of it. Or I've selectively forgotten what happened.
Yeah.
I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, it's really good to be that way because, and people like have their prejudices and stuff, you know, and like, you know, it's just a part of, in a lot of ways, the way that they grew up, you know, or the other people that they're around. So, I, you know, just can't hold that against them. You know, a lot of it is that they haven't been exposed to anything. But one thing I remember he said to me was that I was no different than anybody else, you know? And I found that interesting, right? You know, that I was, that he didn't perceive me as being different than him, right? You know?
Yeah. And this college roommate has, you guys have been, you've known each other since you were kids, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, since high school at least, junior high school, so yeah, I mean, like, he, you know, he, and I think that's to his credit in some ways, you know, he doesn't perceive me as being any different, and I don't, you know, and if you don't perceive somebody as being different, and then you see them getting these benefits, well, and I can't, you know, the scholarship at least was a benefit, right?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So, you know, I wouldn't have gotten that full ride scholarship. You know, I would have gotten in medical school and stuff. Like, I was, like, you know, I had the grades and stuff that, you know, and the, you know, extracurriculars and all that sort of stuff to get in. Anyway, so I would have gotten in somewhere. But, you know, I can't say necessarily that I would have gotten into that school. Or I mean, I had a pretty killer interview, too, you know, with the dean of diversity there. And I don't know if I would have necessarily gotten everything would have happened, you know, from an education standpoint the same, you know, if I weren't. So I mean, there's some truth to, you know, that I did receive some benefit from being Native American, you know, for sure there is, you know.
Yeah, there is. I received benefit. I mean, I didn't pay a penny for my graduate school. And I maybe could have gotten in with just the arts admin, and they don't have you pay there, but I would also receive scholarships and those type of things. So I do think it is, but what I think is not seen by people, like, it's the institutional, like, my buddy, like, the people... I see it with OnKid at work some, and I see it just as a woman trying to get jobs too. Like, there's just there's an old boys kind of like network where it's like it's an unseen benefit that exists, and it's always been there for white men, and they don't see it. So, and white men of certain money, and I think there's 8 ways to move about it, but I also think that we'd have a lot more Native Americans who have college degrees if that was the case. Like, yes, you benefit from it, but we had other benefits that allowed us to get there. And I actually, I think of what I want to do now is, like, how can I help? Like, you helped me do this, is like how to navigate school. Like, I didn't really know how to get scholarships and navigate into an MBA program. And I still wish I knew a lot more before I went in, because I would have gotten a different focus. I would have gone to a different school. I would have, and I just want to help kids. Like, I do this with Paul, like our brother Paul, but also like with nieces and nephews. Like, we just didn't, we've talked about this too. We didn't know, you've said it before, you might not have gone the route of being a doctor if you had known the other routes that were out there. And so it's that kind of exposure and understanding.
I mean, you only know what you know, and, you know, you have to recognize that you don't know. There's a lot that I don't know, right? And so, you know, one of the biggest benefits of that I see, you know, or one of the biggest problems that I see is that, you know, kids, you know, wherever they are, they don't know what their options are. Now, we say there's some you can say there's some institutional problems or whatever, you know, but what it really comes down to is, you know, kids don't have access to, you know, in Salinas, they have access to their teachers, and that's really the only set of professionals that they have. And that's, that's really hard. You know, if you go to one of the private schools or something, you'll have parents who are around, who do all these other things. But even those parents, even though they're around, they're, you know, how much do you get to know them? One of my biggest benefits, I feel like, is, you know, this friend's dad was a chemical engineer who we've been talking about. And I knew him at church. And I knew, that if I wanted to, I could go talk to him, and he would, like, tell me what I needed to do to become a chemical engineer, right? Or, you know, there were doctors at church, there were lawyers at church, and that's, I think, like, the getting away from going to church, especially in, like, minority communities, is a real detriment, because, you know, even if you don't, like, think about that, I mean, that's one area where you have totally different, you know, groups of people getting together. That's like the last, I mean, that's the last place that happens, right? I mean, in our world.
It's totally okay. My kids were in the beginning. Your kids can be in the middle part. But no, I agree with you. And I think of ways that I just heard about this great thing. It's called the Native Pride Project. And it's just starting. And I actually want to. But see, they're like, you can take it to your reservation. The guy is from the Pine Ridge. So I think he's Lakota or something. I'm bad at that. But he really wants. But what he's done is he puts together these letters with Native American. He's asked Native American people to write, like, I'm an engineer, or he's a comedy writer. And they're just like, hey, like, I'm a Native American person and I did this. Like, so you can too. Where I think on the reservations, for a big part, like, if you're not part of the tribal government or in maybe a nurse, maybe that, like, you don't know, especially on the reservation, like, you don't know what else is out there. And so I just think, how can we show these kids? And for me, my passion happens to be Native kids, you know, but like all kids of color or without the benefits that I've had, how can we say, yeah, you too can, you know, do, you know, chemical engineering or become a physician or those different type of things. So that is a good conversation, but I want to rewind. I want to ask you how it's been for you being the only, like, out of the siblings, being the only one. Has it? It doesn't seem to affect you, but, like, looking, like, the only one that looks like mom, like, particularly, you would have been old enough to remember this, and maybe you don't, but I remember it. We were at a mall in Utah, and this woman comes up to mom. I don't think she knew mom, and we were all four with her. And she's like, oh, are these all your kids? And mom's like, yeah, they're all mine. And she goes, from the same marriage? And she goes, yeah. But, like, how has it affected you being the only one who presents as a person of color, like, of your brothers and sisters?
So, nowadays, it doesn't make any, I don't think it matters at all. You know, I try to make it not matter at all. I don't know. I mean, I felt like, you know, wherever I was, whether I was in high school, you know, we had where there's a big Latino population, you know, it made a little bit of a difference, you know, and I don't know what it would have been like if I looked like Paul or Aaron or something, you know. I can't tell you what Paul and Aaron's and your experiences were. So, you know, what I can say what it was like for me, and I feel like if I kind of said that, I always viewed myself as like part of, you know, whatever group I was with, you know. I mean, you sort of have to do that. I mean, the world's a tribal, you know, and if you don't make yourself a part of that group, then you're lost, right? I mean, so
That's good. And I your perspective, I really enjoy, like, I'm so glad you made the time for this, because I enjoy that perspective. But with that, I think too, like, I'm looking at the time. Thank you. I want to thank you. But before we go, I want to ask you, like, do you have something you want to share with my listeners about something you're really into right now? And I'll share mine first. And then you can share yours, and then we can wrap up. So mine is, I just finished the episode. There's this one show I watch while I do laundry, because it's a little graphic for my kids to be around. And so I kind of get to do laundry by myself on Sundays, and Anka takes the boys, and or while they're napping. And it's called Carnival Row. And it's not bad.
I knew you would like that show.
Yeah, okay. So I didn't think I would, but it's really good. And it takes this really weird, I kind of guess he was a half-breed or half-blood or whatever. Like, I'm probably ruining it somewhere for spoiler alert. But
You have to say spoiler alert before you get the spoiler.
Okay, I'll go back and edit. I'll go back and edit that out. But I think it takes a really interesting, I mean, it's the same story. It's race. It just made race into fairies and all these like imaginary creatures, right? And so I finished it today folding 4 loads of laundry. And though I did get my boys to help me match, well, Rehan to match socks, my hair just kept holding up saying, I found it. But I really like that show, Carnival Row. I didn't expect to like it. I was like, fantasy, like whatever. But it actually, I'm interested. I want to see the next season and where it goes. So what do you have to share with our guests?
So one of my favorite things to do, I love talking with my 11-year-old daughter just about all sorts of stuff, but I also coach my kids in softball and baseball, and Johnny's getting ready to start football. And one of my favorite things to do is I should have known how to do better when I was a kid. The rich kids would go and take lessons at baseball, you know.
Yeah.
I can learn that stuff on YouTube and learning and teaching like my dad. So I like watching and learning how to do stuff. Like, it can be like baseball or football or basketball or whatever, but I also like learning how to do like wire my own cables for Ethernet. I wired our whole house.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Ankit's been learning a lot of things. He replaced a garbage disposal.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
From YouTube. That's He's awesome. Like, I saved us $500. And this is a guy who didn't even take his own trash out till he moved to the United States.
All right, James. He used to be a smart man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he used to live in a place where labor was really, really, really cheap. But yeah, they hire an electrician to come hang up Diwali lights. Like, they don't hang up their own lights. I did it, and people were like, what are you doing? And I was like, it's hanging up lights. But it was, so, yeah. No, learning things on YouTube. That's good.
And because we have the new house, like, I'm doing a lot of that sort of stuff for, But, I feel like that's part of the humor is, like, a friend of mine, And how many, I love that because, in some ways I feel bad learning about what he does, because I feel like, I'm questioning him a little bit, and he's my friend, but that's part of being, a part of the group is like trying to understand not just what they think, but what they do, because what we do has a huge effect on who we are, I think that's something that's helped me to like forget or not pay as much attention to I'm brown, I have black hair, I look a little browner because I have lots of freckles too.
Where'd they go with age?
I'm like dad right now. I have one big freckle on my my face. But anyway.
Yeah.
So, I love what I do, and I love other people, understanding them helps make me happy.
Well, that's what I'm hoping this podcast does a little too, is just sharing stories. I just feel like I'm excited. Like, I had my first non-family guest last episode, and just giving people even your perspective. Like, I think the thing that I've been learning lately is that we all think very differently. Like, not everybody thinks like me, and like, I shouldn't expect everyone to think like me. And
really?
No, and I'm not like just learning it, but it's solidifying that like Like, I know not everybody thinks exactly like me, but in the ways that, like, I go, my life, I, like, plan out, like, I do to, and it's ways I've dealt with my anxiety. Like, I just plan things out, and I, like, have all these, like, I think 10 steps ahead, and I realize that a lot of people, also known as my husband, don't do that. Like, and it helps me to be like, oh, that's why he's like getting the kids all super riled up right before bed. And it helps me to be like, he's not thinking about putting them to sleep. He's just enjoying the moment with them, which is like so much better than what I do.
You and I think the same way that way then.
Yeah. Well, and we can, but you know, there's just, it's, and I think that's what podcasts do too. They share different perspectives for different people, and there's something you can listen to while you're, you know, wiring your house for Ethernet. Well,
okay. I love you, Heather.
Hey listeners, if you've made it this far, I want to ask you a favor. If you could go over to Apple Podcasts and put a review and what you think of Mixed Identity, that would be super helpful. Again, if you have any thoughts of the episode that you just heard, you can check us out at Facebook at Identity Mixed or Instagram at Identity_Mixed. And I'd love to continue this conversation.
Our theme music is Ice Flow by Kevin McLeod, licensed by Creative Commons. It can be found at filmmusic.io or incomtech.com.